and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
KHJ Los Angeles.
3:31 in Los Angeles. This is the Real Dom Steve.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Old and New Movie Review, the movie review show where we talk about classics and new releases in theaters now. I am your host, Jake. I am your host, Jake. I am joined by Siri. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Pretty good. Talking good. About possibly my favorite movie of the year. I think it's a very good contender.
Oh, it was so good.
It was so good, and it's almost on video. So I think it's going to be on streaming in exactly 4 days, November 24th. But don't...
That's my birthday.
Perfect. But don't buy it, Siri. Hint, hint.
Okay. I'm just going to leave that one alone.
It might be a present of some sort.
Maybe. Maybe Juan's getting it for me.
So, to the people at home, we are talking about Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. This movie blew my... I saw it twice in the theater. It blew my fucking mind. It was just so good. And there's so much to be said about Quentin Tarantino, but I think the first thing to just start off about what we think of the man, and then I'm going to have Siri start that off. Just an overall thoughts on Quentin Tarantino and what a fucking genius he is. Where could I go?
I got distracted. Tarantino is just another one of those people who is so good with dialogue and overall story,
yeah.
And he's good at playing on situations that happen in real life, but in a way that makes them funny, if that makes sense.
And he, like, I know this sounds like a weird point, but, like, just the fact that he loves movies so much, like, his movie collection is gigantic. Like, he actually has, like, reels of movies he keeps in his collection, and he just screens them all the time. And then before they started filming Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he gave, like, Margot Robbie, Leo, and Brad Pitt, like, it was kind of like something I would do. Like, he gave them, like, a group of movies to watch before they started filming to get into, like, the tone of what he was aiming for. And I thought that was such a, like, that, I mean, what was the first Tarantino movie you ever watched?
First Tarantino movie I ever watched.
Mine was Pulp Fiction. I have the obvious choice, but.
I think it was Pulp Fiction, but it was back when I didn't know it was by Tarantino.
Oh, yeah. Child. Yeah. You know, I was kind of the same way. I knew of Tarantino because I watched Pulp Fiction right when Django Unchained came out, and it was right after I watched Django. And I watched it, like, I was 15 years old. It blew my mind. Like, I had never seen a movie like that. I never witnessed a movie like that. I was, like, floored. And then I was, like, I was obsessed with his work. So after that, I watched all of his movies, Reservoir Dogs, Jackie Brown, Kill Bill. Well, I'd actually seen Kill Bill before because my mom's a big fan, but... I when I watched Pulp Fiction, it was like an epiphany experience because it was almost like I could realize that people could talk this way in movies. Like, it could feel real. It could feel organic. Like, Quentin Tarantino has listened to people in the world, and he's just put it in his movies, and that is what I love about him, how authentic everything he writes feels, and it's just enjoyable. Like,
yeah. Well, it's like, I had a teacher in high school who said something like, the reason comedians are a good comedian sees the world, but they see it through a slightly different lens. They see things exactly the way they are, but they find comedy in it, and that's exactly what Tarantino does.
Oh yeah, and you know he does the best, like, fine line between comedy and drama, because his movies are very humorous, but very good dramatic angles. And to kind of transition that to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is very much both in the same, and how the conception of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood happened was, I think it was, they were making Inglourious Basterds, and Quentin Tarantino, he noticed, like, this actor had his own stuntman, and it was something along the lines of, this is my, like, backup guy for whenever I do my stunts and all that. So Quentin Tarantino kind of put that in the back of his mind, and the first character he created was Cliff Booth, and this was, like, all the way in 2009 or 2010. And then he was like, oh, okay, I came up with a stuntman, now I have to come up with an actor that he's the stuntman for, and that's how Rick Dalton came across. And then what happened with that is he decided to set it in the 60s, and he thought of the idea of having him, again, this is going to be totally spoiler, because if you see this movie, you have to see this movie totally fresh, because that ending will... You do not know anything about the ending, so spoiler warning starting now.
Exactly. If you are still planning to see it, turn this off now, listen to it later.
And then come back to me. Exactly. Because that's why we're doing it right close to the streaming, really, so you can watch it and then come back.
Yes.
So he came up with Rick Dalton, and then he came up with Cliff Booth, and then he had this idea... you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to have them be neighbors to Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate. It's literally how the thought process went. And then he was like, okay, what if they were neighbors when the Sharon Tate murders happen and, like, a different events happen? And this is exactly his thought process. Like, he came up with this, and then he came up with the ending scene first, which is, like, totally not what he usually does. And he was like, okay... So you have Cliff Booth, Rick Dalton, they live next to the Polanskis, and the Sharon Tate murders happen. And then he had that ending in the bag. And then Quentin Tarantino, he did the opposite. He did the first part of the movie before that ending scene. And Quentin Tarantino, I saw this in an interview, he was like, I don't know how I should structure this movie. And then Quentin Tarantino, he straight up said, I just had it be a chill-out movie, because he said, I was so confident that my characters were strong enough that I could just show a day in their life. And then I could show how that day in their life kind of makes an impact a couple months later. And just the characters are so good that you don't care just hanging out. Like, the first 2 hours of the movie, you're really just hanging out with Cliff and Rick.
Oh, yeah.
And Sharon Tate.
You get to know them a little better. And exactly. You're like, why is Sharon Tate in here if you hadn't known the background story of any of this?
Exactly. But you know, I thought the same thing. Like, if someone who, like, knew nothing about Sharon Tate or the Manson murders, like, they go in and be like, why is this chick just, like... in this movie, she has nothing to do with the story. And then when you see the end, and then when you read about it, you're like, oh my God, that's so genius. Because it was actually something funny, because Quentin Tarantino got asked at a like a press screening or a Q&A, and it was like, someone asked, how come Sharon Tate has very little dialogue in the movie? And then Quentin Tarantino just said, I reject your hypothesis. Because he was like, you missed the point. The point of Sharon Tate is she's supposed to be like... He described it beautifully. Because I didn't get it at first when I first saw the movie. But then I saw an interview. He was like, Sharon Tate's like the angelic presence of the movie. You know, she's overseeing everything. And that was perfect. And you know, and Quentin Tarantino said that. He just wanted to show a life in the day in Sharon Tate's life. Like how it was before, you know, she got unfortunately murdered by the Manson family. Eight and a half months pregnant, too.
Yeah, and my brother actually is one of those people who had no idea about the backstory.
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
Adam called my mom, and he was like, you have to see this movie. It's very good. And she was like, it's going to be really interesting for me because I grew up during that time. I saw all these things in the headlines. And he's like, what are you even talking about?
Like, your mom grew up when that was a thing. Like, when Sharon Tate got murdered in 69. How old's your mom?
My mom, I mean, she didn't...
She was probably like a kid. That's what I meant. Like, she saw it on the news.
Yeah, and then she kind of saw all of these people, kind of like all of the Manson family and what they were up to, like how some got like arrested, some just got away, all of those things. And she was just like, she was there through the ride of it, and she was actually reading it. So she knew all of the characters. She saw it, and she's just
the non-fictional,
the real ones. Yeah, so she thought it was great, but my brother just had no idea that it was a real story.
I mean,
it's just like Tarantino is really creative.
He is. I like it more than say something like Inglourious Basterds, because Quentin Tarantino definitely has much more of a nostalgic and personal connection to like this, because they say the Manson murders are kind of the end of the hippie movement in the 60s, and you know, the late 60s, it was kind of a different era for movies, you know, these big releases, and like, it was all Oscar movies, and you know, there was so much money behind it. Quentin Tarantino said Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was his Roma, which, like, his nostalgic piece about L.A., because Tarantino was actually born in Tennessee, and he moved to L.A. when he was really young, so you just see the glamour. Now, there's so much to talk about in so little time, but... First thing I want to say, probably like one of the most obvious things about it besides the ending, is just how good it looks, because how they transform like LA, like 2019 LA and the 1960s LA, and no CGI. It looks like the 60s, like it feels like the 60s,
it really
it's
does.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on that?
I thought that they did a really good job with that, and I didn't know that there was no CG. That's kind of cool, but
yeah, I mean, it was all natural. Like he actually closed the LA freeway for a scene. It's the one where Cliff is riding, and it was also it was the no CG and the fact that he had to do deals with certain businesses so they can redecorate their outlet as a 60s outlet, because what happened was Tarantino was affiliated with Harvey Weinstein for years, and then the allegations came out, so Tarantino went to a new production company, and Sony was the one that gave him all the conditions. You can cast whoever you want, you get a $100 million budget, you get first cut, you get the box office gross. They gave Tarantino all these things to do to make sure that
yeah.
But it's just crazy. And the driving scenes, just when it's Cliff driving through LA, when you first watch the movie, you don't understand I love those parts because I love to drive. And then when you realize, oh, it's just a showcase LA, 60s LA, he's just driving across. He's I'm going to leave Rick's house. And then they just show him driving home from Rick's house at the beginning.
Yeah.
So I want to have you kind of just talk about the, we're just talking about you, if you want to just start about the overall plot of the movie, or just how it kind of begins with Rick and Cliff.
Yeah. So in the beginning, I'm actually trying to remember the very beginning. Whenever I think of the movie, I think of the middle and the end. But yeah, it kind of explains that he is a stuntman, and that
Rick is he's the star of the Western Bounty Law.
Exactly, and he was a stuntman for Rick
Dalton.
Rick, yeah, he was the stuntman for Rick. And so he was in all of Rick's things, but they kind of, they got really close.
Yeah.
There were some, issues because
Rick kind of became a has-been after the show ended because he didn't really have he kind of did a lot of B-movies in his film career. What's the one they talk about? The seven, the something Fist of McCluskey, the one where he burns the Nazis. It's mm-hmm. a cheesy B-movie. Exactly. And then Cliff, he lost work because there's quote-unquote rumors he killed his wife.
Yeah, and to be fair, I personally do not believe that he killed his wife.
But I don't either.
But I know at least four people who do. So, I mean, it's really up to interpretation.
Well, and the movie was very smart in having it be ambiguous.
Exactly.
Well, okay. So they show the flashback. And they do two very good things. One, they don't show him straight up doing it. And two, even if you think he did it, his wife was really bitchy and annoying. So even if he did do it, Cliff is still sympathetic in that light. And the fact that Cliff kind of redeems himself, if you think he did it, Cliff kind of redeems himself at the end of the movie with how he kind of, what's the proper term, kind of takes care of the Manson followers.
Yeah, quote, takes care of. Is an intense scene. My God.
One of his best. I mean, you think the torture scene in Reservoir Dogs was hardcore? Nah, don't even go there.
Exactly. It's true Tarantino fashion to have a big ending. He's just very good at making everything go down in the last
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at Pulp Fiction with the diner scene and just mm-hmm. how Samuel Jackson talks him down. It's so gets under your skin. Or Django Unchained when they have the big showdown. Yeah. Then he goes back. Well, he gets captured. Then he goes back to destroy the house. And then Samuel Jackson's just you son of a bitch.
It's okay, let's just kill everybody now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Inglourious Basterds, he just fucking kills Hitler. He's I don't care if it's historically accurate. I'm just going to kill him.
Fuck it. I'm going to fucking kill this guy. He's an asshole.
And then, exact same thing with this one. I don't care. I'm going to make justice for what these people did to Sharon Tate and her unborn kid.
Exactly.
And it's funny because Rick Dalton's this has-been actor. And how the movie kind of explains it, he does mostly just TV spots now. He just does small roles. And Cliff is just there. Cliff's technically a stuntman, but at this point in his career, Rick kind of just hires him to hang out with him and drive him around because Rick lost his driver's license in a bunch of DUI incidents. So basically, Rick gets offered to do all these spaghetti westerns in Italy, and he gets really freaked out, and he's my career's over, my career's over. So you just kind of see him freaking out, and then you have these kind of subtle scenes where this one Manson chick named Pussycat keeps kind of, she's there following Cliff, like, throughout the movie. Like, she's there at the beginning, she's there in the middle, and then at the third time where she's like, hey, drive me to the ranch.
Yeah, and you know what I found interesting? I read about this online. Pussycat was actually made of, like, a bunch of different people.
Yeah.
She was one character in the movie, but she was made of
like a bunch of people who were in the Manson family.
Exactly.
Like kind
they
of
just
a composite.
Put them all together. They were like, you know what? Let's just make one. This makes it easier on us. And I thought that was really cool. There was another show or movie where that happened. I think it was, it was Chernobyl.
Oh, Chernobyl. Oh, Chernobyl is so good.
It was. It really
was.
What
character did they do that in Chernobyl?
Forgot which one, but I know there was one that was like literally just like 50 people all together in one. Yeah, they were like, you know, it's gonna be hard to follow if.
If you have like 50 people about the nuclear meltdown in the Soviet Union,
so might as well just make it one. Make it all cut down damage on that. Make it easy to follow. Perfect. I think it's really cool that they can do that.
Oh yeah, and you know that kind of tradition. It's funny. It always starts in like music biopics because they'll take like one manager or one producer the band had instead of like all the people that they had over the years, they will always in music biopics make them like one manager or one producer that was with them the entire time, which is a funny thing. But I like, and there, but what I like about is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, what does better than most movies I know is it blends fiction and nonfiction so well. Because they have the like two fictional characters, they have Rick Dalton and Cliff Booth, but pretty much everyone else in the movie is a real person. You have Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski, her partner Jay, and then there's Pussycat. But what the movie also does is it showcases a lot of real Manson people that actually existed in the movie. Like Tex and Squeaky. All those
I hate that red fucking hair, by the way. It's so orange. Look,
hers in the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why he says in the movie, what are you looking at, you ginger-haired fucker? If you come back again, I'm going to call the fucking cops.
You can't see us, but we're both fucking ginger. But, like...
yeah, we are.
But she's, like, unnaturally so. Like, it was dyed. That's dyed for sure.
Yeah, you know, it was, like, it was not... it was not genuine at all. So
I was shocked to see that was Dakota Fanning. It took me a while to realize that it was her.
Yeah,
she's
it was
grown
her...
up so much, but she
I know.
Looks
she's
so
like in
different.
Her 20s now. Well, one of the chicks in the car, the one who like leaves them, who takes off, that's Uma Thurman's daughter. Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke's daughter.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. And the guy who plays Tex, he was on the Disney Channel. He played James and Switched at Birth. Which I never watched that show, but I was familiar with it because it was on the Disney Channel or on the ABC Family. But he was like, he always did like, he was on Zeke and Luther and like Wizards of Waverly Place. He always did like cameos on those like shows. What happened? Like you find out, we're kind of going all over the place. It's just because I love this movie and I kind of just want to go over all the areas, because there's really not a plot until you get to the end.
Yeah, you're just, like, following these guys, and they go out to fucking Italy, and then they come back.
Yeah, it's like... it's
and you're just like, what is even happening? Like, I'm glad that they have a bromance going on, but, like,
I mean,
what's the point?
And then they get the emotional connection, because, like, Rick's like, I can't afford to keep you anymore. I can't even afford to pay my own host, and he has to let Rick go. And then, like, they describe, like, you know how all friends bid each other adieu with one good-fashioned drunk at the end.
Yes.
I'm like, so true.
Yes.
And they were literally just drinking margaritas and
oh, my God, those margaritas. I was dying. Dying when, like, with the LSD.
Oh, the LSD cigarette.
Oh, my God. He was just like, you could just... I watched him talking, and I'm like, oh, my God, I love you.
It's so accurate. Okay, I've done acid before. It's very, very accurate to how acid is. Just when he walks – well, I just love the fact when he starts his acid trip, he just wants to walk his dog.
Mm-hmm.
He's like – and Chris Cliff Booth has an awesome dog. What was the dog's name?
Yes.
I forgot. Brandy.
Oh, Brandy. Brandy was so fuck you.
Oh, Brandy was the coolest dog. What a the most loyal dog good, ever. Because he literally just snaps his fingers. He snaps his fingers and Brandy attacks the Manson family. Like, I was so happy that that dog was just... I mean, I know it sounds weird, but like, I was happy that the dog was just viciously attacking them.
Yeah.
It was satisfying, but it just made me realize what a good pup Brandy was.
Exactly.
Cliff is just like, snap, bite. And then like, just when he goes to like... Oh, like, when he drops Rick off... And then they kind of set up, you know, oh, it turns out he lives next to Roman Polanski. And he's like, that's Roman Polanski. Maybe I'll get in one of his movies or something. Hint, hint, this is before he got rape allegations. And then when they go to the Playboy Mansion party, Steve McQueen, or an actor playing Steve McQueen, he's like, oh, that little prick's going to get in trouble one day. And then he did.
Yeah, right.
Oh, boy. Well, they say he raped a 13-year-old.
Yeah, and that would definitely get you in trouble, I imagine. So I'm glad that he did get in trouble.
Well, he kind of did. He got the charges, and then he moved to Europe. So he's lived in exile in Europe. He's kind of like Edward Snowden. He's lived in Europe, so they can't press charges against him all this time. And some actors signed like petitions saying he should come back, and that the charges should be dropped. Similar thing actually happened to Charlie Chaplin in the 1950s. He exiled himself to Europe, and then Charlie Chaplin came back to the States to receive an award. That was the only time Charlie Chaplin came back to the United States. So it's funny to see the parallels, and then they set that up. But then you realize, like, Cliff kind of, he lives in his trailer with his dog, and they just kind of have this playful relationship. He's like, don't whine or else you're not getting any food tonight. I don't want to, but I will.
Exactly. And just, I just love the dynamics. I love the dynamics.
Just between Cliff and Rick, and then...
Yeah, and then between Cliff and his dog, and then Cliff and just basically everyone. Oh, he's just a fun guy.
Like Cliff and Bruce Lee, just how
Oh, my God. Bruce Lee's daughter, I think, was really pissed
She was
about
so
that.
Pissed. Yeah. Well, she was like, that was not accurate of how my dad was. And apparently people who knew Bruce Lee said that, too. But then Quentin Tarantino rebuttals, and he's like, oh, well, Bruce Lee actually did say he could fight Muhammad Ali. Apparently, that's what Quentin Tarantino... Apparently, he actually said that.
Yeah.
And, it's actually based on a true story. Well, Bruce Lee did the Green Hornet, and him and the Green Hornet, he was Kato. They were going to cameo on the Batman show from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to fight Robin. Ironic, because I was Robin. But the actor that played Robin, where he was going to fight him, and Robin was going to win. And then Bruce Lee apparently freaked out, went to the producer and said, that's not happening. And they made it a draw. And he said, like, the actor that played Robin, Burt Ward, he's like, you're lucky this isn't real or else we'd be going through some shit right now. Mm-hmm. I'm like, damn, like, was he that, like, up there? And then, like, Quentin Tarantino, he talked about the criticism of the scene. Like, how could you portray that Bruce Lee was beaten so easily by Cliff Booth? And then Quentin Tarantino was like, well, because Cliff Booth's a fictional character. He's played by Brad Pitt. It's like asking if... what would happen if Bruce Lee got beaten up by Dracula? You know, it's not Brad Pitt fighting Bruce Lee, it's Cliff Booth fighting Bruce Lee. Like, you don't understand.
Exactly. It's Brad Pitt. I love Brad Pitt.
He's so good in the movie. He's really good in another movie this year called Ad Astra, but in that movie, he does a totally different type of performance. He plays like an emotionless astronaut. But it's weird because you see... It's just kind of a credit to his acting style. You see him in this movie. He's like the king of charisma and cool. Like he doesn't, but it's just it doesn't even act like he's trying. Cliff Booth is just naturally a cool motherfucker, and I can't explain it. I just love Cliff. He's my favorite movie, a character in the movie. And if Brad Pitt wins the Oscar for playing him, that'd be pretty dope.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think he will. Honestly, I think that either he will.
Well, I think they're going to give him the Best Supporting Actor nom, so he has a higher chance.
Yeah.
Because the three big Oscar contenders now are Joaquin Phoenix for Joker, Leonardo DiCaprio for Rick Dalton, and then Robert De Niro for The Irishman.
I have only seen...
two.
I think I only saw one.
We saw Joker.
I saw Joker.
And this movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, shit, you're right. I forgot to count that one.
The only one you gotta see is The Irishman, but it's almost on Netflix, so and being on Netflix you can watch it in bit pieces, so you can't complain about the delay.
Yeah,
but like that movie, it uses it's weird, like you see De Niro young, it freaks me out, but it's really well done. You can't even tell it's CG.
okay, I'll check it out for sure.
Yeah,
I do think that I preferred the performance by Brad Pitt to the one on from Joaquin Phoenix.
I do too. Well, that's so why I think they want to put them in. They want to put Brad Pitt in Best Supporting, so he doesn't have to compete with Joaquin Phoenix.
Cause exactly, because I think that he would do okay if he was competing with him. But there are some Batman fans out there that it's hard to tell.
He was good. Joaquin Phoenix was good.
He did a good job, but like I feel like this movie didn't get the publicity or eye that it deserved, you know?
It should have, yeah, I agree. Joker's kind of blown it out of the water, even though they're not at all related, but in the sense that Joker's become the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time. It's grossed over $1 billion at the box office, and it's fucking R-rated. Yeah. And I was just, remember when we saw it and we got ID'd before we went to go see it? They're like, we're getting kids sneaking into the movie, and look at what's happened. It, like, made all this money regardless. Oh my goodness, he beats up Bruce Lee, and then you have this alternate. So you just have this subplot, like, before, like, the action of the movie starts, which I think to myself, it's not near the end of the movie, but the movie's so long, it happens in like the last 40 minutes. But you kind of have these three plots going on, like, through the bulk of the movie. You have, basically, I'll start with Sharon Tate. Sharon Tate's kind of just living a day with her life. She picks up a hitchhiker, she goes to a bookstore, and then for some reason she goes to see a movie that she's starring in. I don't get it. Why would you just watch your own movie?
I think unless you're at the premiere. I noticed that they were definitely portraying her a little bit as kind of like a ditzy kind of self-centered woman.
A little bit.
And I know that she was not like that in real life. That's what I've heard.
Well, and in the movie, they kind of want to illustrate the difference, because when she goes to see the movie, they don't show Margot Robbie. They show the actual Sharon Tate in the footage she watches on the screen.
Exactly.
So I think they do want to kind of symbolize the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that they kind of acknowledge that Sharon Tate wasn't like a huge actress at the her husband was much more well known because he just directed Rosemary's Baby before this time. She was kind of like a C. She was kind of like on Rick's level. She maybe a little higher, but she was like a C actress, B actress. And at the time, like in the 60s, she was kind of building up, rising up. And then this happened to her. It was kind of like a James Dean scenario. You know, you die so young, you're kind of iconic because of that reason, right as you were getting famous. So Sharon Tate is in that. And I think the movie kind of shows. I keep banging my thing on this all the time.
Sounded so cool, though.
Boom. So they kind of showcase this in the movie, like Sharon Tate's building up and she's kind of illustrating she's going to be known in infamy. Maybe not for her work, but just for the means of how she died. And that's why I like what Tarantino does. He just wants to show her life. You know, she just drives around and hangs out in LA. And that's really with all the dudes except for kind of Rick, because Rick's actually working at the time. I like that it's not showcased as much as the other ones, because her subplot isn't as involving, but again, what Tarantino said, she's kind of the arc over the movie. I kind of have a bigger respect for it. And then there's that subplot. I'm kind of going to talk about them one by one, because then I'd be saying the word meanwhile 10 times. So meanwhile, Rick Dalton is doing a bit spot on the show Lancer. He plays the villain, and he goes in there for the day. And he's with the actor Timothy Hollipant from Justified, the show Justified. He's also in that really fucking awful show with Drew Barrymore called Santa Monica Diet. That's
the
him.
Santa Clarita Diet.
Oh, my God. My experience with that show is I went over to my uncle's house. my cousin, my like 13-year-old to 15-year-old cousins were watching it. I was like, what the fuck is this awful?
So bad.
And then when you told me your parents liked it, I was like, what the hell?
Loved it for a very long time. But apparently, after a while, it got too weird even for them. They were talking about how after a certain point in time, there were, like, Nazi zombies or something.
What?
Yeah, some weird shit. Like, she was eating Nazis or something like that. And I was like, okay. Yeah, that sounds weird. They're like, yeah, it got too weird for us. We had to turn it off.
Damn, man.
And that's high standards because my mom and my dad were really into it when it was awful in the beginning. Like, they were into it when it was that bad, imagine how bad it must be now for them to not want to be into it.
Well, and I remember I asked my cousins, I was like, what's this show? And they were like, oh, so this girl, she eats a raw oyster and then she becomes a zombie. I'm like, what? Did you really just say that?
Yeah, that's the synopsis for you for the entire show. That's the that should be the Netflix tagline.
Hijinks ensue after that. Mm-hmm. Don't they have kids on the show too, and then they try to hide it. I'm like, ugh. So to see that actor go from total shit to amazing quality, quite interesting. And then that actor he plays Timothy Olyphant, he plays the star of the show Lancer, the one that Rick's doing a spot. He actually died in a motorcycle crash, or he got paralyzed because of a motorcycle crash. So Rick has to do the spot, and he the big like emotional scene is he fucks up his line. Like, he has to go line, he messes up, he has to do it again, and then he freaks out in this trailer. And then I'm kind of good to go into the background of the scene. The scene's actually entirely improvised. Which is very rare for Tarantino, because Tarantino is one of those directors, he likes to stick exclusively to the script. But Leonardo DiCaprio is basically like, it's really hard for me to like properly emote, because like I can't act like how he acts, I act like how I act. So like I want to do like this kind of scene to show how frustrating it is for an actor like this that he blew his line. And then he did it, and I thought it was a really like real kind of visceral moment.
Yeah, I felt it like when I was watching it, it felt really real to me, and it was respectable. I'm glad that he was able to do that. And just generally, it seemed like acting just did not seem fun, man.
No,
it sounded awful.
Especially both acting in theater and in movies is very stressful, because theater, it's kind of the way you have to you do like one play a night, but you have to do it like over and over for several months. Like, especially if you're doing a show on Broadway. And then the problem with movies is you have to do like takes like 20 fucking times, and then you have to wait in between every take. So there's a lot of waiting around and stuff like that. So you have the frustration. So when you mess up a line or mess up a take, again, I keep doing that. When you mess up a line or a take, it's frustrating in the actor's viewpoint. And I think, like, the fact that he just freaks out, like, you embarrass yourself in front of those goddamn people. Fuck, I'm a fucking baboon. And I was like, that is such a good moment. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I thought it was tense.
Very. And the movie is very good at...
Okay, I found this on the web for "as very it was tense."
Okay, Siri. Okay.
Siri. Sorry. Accidentally called Siri.
Oops. I don't even know how I did that. I never said those words. I never said that. Hey, blank. I said nothing like that, but maybe I did.
Maybe.
Got distracted. Sorry, what were we talking about?
We were talking about the movie.
Yeah, yeah, I got that part. What about the
about the highlight of the movie for you, when you see Luke Perry in his last movie.
Oh my God, yeah, I was so emotional, and my dad didn't realize it was Luke Perry.
Really?
Until afterwards.
Does he look that different from, like, 90210 days?
I don't know. I think that my dad just didn't, like, look for his face. I had to go back
like,
in and show him.
I heard that it was his last movie before, so I was kind of looking through him throughout the movie, and then I saw him. I was like, what? That's Luke Perry? It's his last movie. Like, he filmed it right before he died.
As an avid Riverdale watcher, I knew exactly what he looked like now. So
when
I
saw
him,
like,
I was automatically like, oh my God, Luke Perry. I didn't know he was in it. And I got really emotional, and I started to cry a little bit, but, like, just enough to stay in my eyes. I love that man.
And
he was such a good man. I'm talking about his character now, but, like, in Riverdale, he was, like...
He's a good actor.
He's the sweetest dad in the world. And the fact that he's gone, they have not even, like, thought to explain what's going on from the point where I am in Riverdale. They just kind of cut him out. They faded him out. They never told you what was going on there.
They're probably gonna do something what they did in Dark Knight Rises after Heath Ledger died. They in Dark Knight Rises, they don't mention the Joker at all, out of respect.
Like, yeah, they haven't mentioned him at all so far. I'm very behind in Riverdale at this point.
Well, how many seasons? What, two seasons? Three seasons?
I feel like there's three or four now.
Oh,
I don't know which one I was on.
I'm out of touch with Archie.
No, but it was so good. And
to see him. And it was a good
I got pissed at it, though. I got really pissed at Riverdale. I mean, I'm off on a tangent now.
About Riverdale, it's
about
okay.
About Riverdale, you, yeah.
Continue.
So, yeah. Like, the season that I stopped watching in the middle of, or I guess at the very end of, and there are new episodes since then, but I have not checked them out, was, like, a D&D kind of parody thing.
Uh-oh.
It was really weird. They called it, Dragons and Gargoyles or... something in Gargoyles. Griffins and Gargoyles.
Griffins and Gargoyles?
G&G. And it was like a game that kind of took over the world. Not took over the world, but it was in play in real life in a way. And they were looking for, like, it would, like, I want to say brainwash people into, like, killing themselves or others.
Damn!
And it was crazy. And I'm like, this is ridiculous because, like, it changed a lot of the main characters. The newest season, I feel like, not the newest, but the one I saw shouldn't have been there. It was totally out of the norm for
Jump the shark.
For Riverdale in general.
Like, or it was nuke not, the fridge, as Indiana Jones.
It was not Riverdale. That's what I can say. It was not the same show that it was. And I think that there are probably a lot of people who agree with me on that. Melody and I stopped watching around the same time.
Oh, she's on the same side. Like, she doesn't like Riverdale anymore either.
She likes it, and we both kind of want to watch it because we remember now, what it was. Okay. But it's not that anymore.
But that's most TV shows. Most TV shows, when they get bad, you kind of just finish them because you're like, oh, I went this far. Even if it's not good anymore, I have to finish the series.
Yeah.
And but that's how True Blood was for me.
Yeah. We used to have Riverdale Wednesday, so I'd like go over to her house, and we'd watch the episode of Riverdale because I didn't have TV. And it was great, but we just stopped. We were like, nah, this is weird. We're going to stop now. And that was around when It 2 came out.
Oh, really?
We were catching up. We were like, nah. So we watched It Chapter 1, and we just stopped watching Riverdale altogether.
And It Chapter 2 comes out on Blu-ray soon.
I'm so excited. So excited. I showed Chris It Chapter 1 the other day.
He'd never seen it before?
No, he hadn't. And it was really long, and I showed it to him really late, so we had to turn it off.
It's not as long as the second one's longer. The second one's 2 hours and 50 minutes.
I chose the wrong time to start the movie, so we just kind of we paused it, but it was a rental, so it went away.
Oh, I thought you bought it. I was there when you bought it.
I did, and I forgot that I bought it when I rented it.
Oh, my God.
And I can finish it, but I have to figure out where we were. I think it was in the middle of the... The big thing at the end, like the big fight thing at the end.
But. Well, from now on, just like message me when you want to watch a movie. I'll be like, I'll hook it up on the cloud.
I can do that. I'm just an idiot. I forgot to watch that movie we were going to do today.
It's okay. We'll do it eventually. Yeah, we'll do it eventually. Just watch this weekend.
We were not planning to do Once Upon a Time in Hollywood today.
Happy accident because it's a movie I love.
It's a great movie, and I'm glad that we're reviewing it, but it was a total surprise, and that was my fault.
It's okay.
So, the movie we were going to watch, I forgot to...
We won't say what it is because we'll save the surprise for an episode.
Oh, I forgot. I was going to send Chris something. He's texting me about it. He wants my ID. One second. Sorry.
Okay.
Keep talking.
Okay. So, a funny story about the movie. We were talking about Luke Perry. Leonardo DiCaprio actually geeked out when Luke Perry came on set because he was a big 90210 fan when he was a teenager. So Leonardo DiCaprio was geeking out over Luke Perry and was like, holy shit, I don't know who he played in Beverly Hills 90210, but like Leonardo DiCaprio was like geeking out. He's like, holy shit, I can't believe that's him.
I think that he was, he played a bad boy from what I remember hearing. I don't remember who he played either, but.
Yeah, I mean, my mom would know because my mom's when she was in high school, she was a huge Beverly Hills 90210 fan.
Yeah. No, it was apparently just like, one second. I keep fixing this. He's like, I need to call insurance, dude, before they close. I don't know what's going on. Sorry. What was I saying? Internship woman, my internship coordinator from the other day. And by the other day, I mean like 2 years ago.
Well, you graduated. Yeah, you don't have to worry about this anymore.
She was talking to me about it because I was talking about how he died, and she said that he was like a huge, huge bad boy.
It was a stroke,
that he was in, yeah. And so I would every time I think of him, I think of little Fred Andrews, and he's not Fred Andrews in the other show. I have to watch it and see what he's like.
Well, he plays the character Dylan McKay. Okay. He was on the show. Only a couple people were on the show the whole series.
That's really strange.
Well, that was the joke about 90210, is like they were supposed to be high school students, but they were like in their early to mid-20s. Like that was the joke everyone said about the show, that they were like, they looked way older than the age they were. And there were like no black people on the show either. That was a big criticism of 90210 as well.
Yeah. To be fair, though, I think Kristen Bell was 24 when she played like a 15-year-old in... And Veronica Mars.
Oh, yeah.
She pulled it off so well, though.
Oh, actually, I think Veronica Mars started later than that.
I think maybe she was 30. There's a chance she was 30. I thought maybe she's like 24, between 24 and 30.
She was 24.
Okay.
Playing a 15-year-old.
Yeah, no, it was ridiculous. And
is she really a 15-year-old? Like, she's a freshman?
She plays...
okay, I'm on Wikipedia. She's a 17-year-old junior.
Like a sophomore junior.
According to Wikipedia. But okay, still, that's 17. Super young.
It was way... It's a huge difference.
But she's always... She looks really... She's almost 40 and she looks really young still.
She's 7 years older when she started that show, she was 7 years older than the person she was playing.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But she plays, she pulls it off really well.
I mean, you look at Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. They were very close to there. Mm-hmm. okay, so. Oh, yeah. We got to get back to Brax Tax.
Oh, yeah, we're way off topic now.
But that's the beauty of a podcast.
Exactly. You guys get to come off topic with us and enjoy the ride.
Because we don't have a time limit on here.
Yeah, I mean, well, quote, time limit.
We kind of do.
We have to get out of here by 23
minutes. See, when I have when I have the hookup at my place, it's going to be way easier. Don't worry, kids. But we talk about the issue in regards to, okay, so he nails the scene. He's filming Rick Dalton. You know, he, like, kind of nails it in one take. And then there's that also that really good scene with the child actress. And she was very good in the movie. Forget her name, but she was very excellent.
Great job.
She's like 10 or 9.
I love that scene so much. I was just like, okay, go, girl.
She's so sassy.
Oh, my God. I love it.
And then, yeah, when he was so into the method acting that she literally goes up to him when, like, he does the take and was like, that's the best piece of acting I've ever seen. I'm like, damn. He was really good in that scene, though.
He was. But, like, no, when, she was fantastic.
Oh, she was really good, so too. Good. Speaking of child actors, Haley Joel Osment from The Sixth Sense was at the resort I work at about a week ago. Days I was sick.
That's so cool. The days you were sick. Of course.
And I have the same birthday as him, too. Not the same. So cool, though. April 10th, 1988. That's his birthday. And mine's 98. And we were joking at work. How often do you think he hears I See Dead People? He probably is so tired of it.
Oh, yeah. And I'm picturing just Emily Osment, his sister, just saying it at him over and over just because I feel like
was she on Miley, Hannah Montana?
Yeah, she was Lily. She was also in what my favorite movie was when I was a kid because I was kind of I don't know. I went through a phase, but the Haunting Hour.
Yeah, that's definitely a phase movie if I ever heard one.
That was a phase for sure. And when I go back and I watch it, I'm like, this is not as good as I remember it being.
Well, and on a similar story, so we successfully talked about the two subplots. I'm going to talk about Cliff's after this, but I want to tell this quick story. I know this guy who used to work at Publix named Bob. He worked in the Publix deal. He worked in New York as a stockbroker. He met Robert De Niro one time, and he brought up the taxi driver you talking to me, and apparently De Niro was like, oh my God, I hear that every fucking day of my life. I can't escape that line.
Oh, that poor man.
I'm like, but it's not, I can imagine. It's not even a scripted line. He improvised it.
When you improvise and then you get it quoted at you for years and years and years.
Who the fuck do you think you're talking to?
You talking to me?
Oh, boy. I mean, if you want to see Joker but better, watch Taxi Driver.
Old school Joker.
That's cool. Travis Bickle, you know, he's, he takes a girl to a porno theater on a date and then she breaks up with him.
I mean, sometimes that happens. Oh, my God. This is something that the world probably doesn't need to know. But last night, did they tell you that we were watching Marge Simpson porn?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was fun.
No, he posted on Snapchat.
Yeah, but then we watched some other things after that.
Oh, I did. Well, no, funny story. I was at work when he sent me that. As soon as I opened it, my coworker
got Jillian, Malibu.
My coworker. No, next time we hang out, you'll Mai Tai is an upside down cake. At the liquor store, they smell a small thing of amaretto, which is almond liqueur for drinks. They make a tiny thing for like $3.99 or $6.99.
Such a good deal.
Oh my God. The only thing I had to buy a big thing of was vanilla vodka. They don't have a small thing of vanilla vodka, but they have every other fucking flavor of vodka.
I feel like vanilla could be used for a lot of things. So vanilla's in all of the baked goods.
For a good upside down cake, you need whipped cream. They prefer whipped cream vodka, but vanilla works okay too.
Oh, I left whipped cream vodka at Sam's house.
Oh, really? Oh, we could use it next time. And I'll use the stuff for Mai Tais too. Don't worry.
Perfect. You'll get rid of my vodka. I fucking hate vodka. But I can use it in things.
See,
that
I didn't
you
know if you were going to like it because Sam used to hate vodka for years and now he loves vodka.
Mm-hmm. You see, I don't think I'll ever quite love vodka, but if it is covered up well flavored vodka,
again, upside down cake, it's just a mixer.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You mix it in with juices and, again, liqueur. Same with the Mai Tai. You know, it's not just light and dark rum. Mai Tais are good. And there's debate on how to make a good Mai Tai. I think Mai Tai is the best. It's Mai Tai hat. It's white and dark rum, amaretto, orange Serico, and then pineapple, orange juice, and with a top of grenadine. And then the garnish is an orange. Because you only use pineapple garnishes for frozen drinks. That's the bartender way to go, but most people use those anyway. So my, we'll go back to, speaking of chronic alcoholism, because Rick Dalton is a chronic alcoholic in this movie. We talk about my favorite subplot of the movie, Cliff Booth. He's just chilling the whole day.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, no, he was definitely my favorite part of the movie.
Oh, absolutely.
He was such a, he's one of the best. His personality type was just so ideal for how it.
He's just so cool. And he loves life. And he's just so happy. Yeah. Like, he doesn't care that he's just, his life is just hanging out with his best friend and driving him around. He doesn't mind. Like, yeah. He just is down with the action. And I love it.
He's down with the sickness. No, he's just like, you know what? Let's have fun.
Exactly.
I don't care.
And he just goes with him to Italy.
I've been accused of killing my wife. I could do anything at this point. I'm good. I've seen the worst of it. Let's have fun.
He's a fucking loser.
I love him.
While she was drinking a Bloody Mary. Well, and it happens, like, Rick asks him, can you just fix my TV antenna on the roof?
Right.
I just thought that was so funny. He's like, this stuntman who, like, served in World War II as a Green Beret. He's like, my antenna fell last night. Can you fix it? And then he just goes on the roof. And the coolest thing about his, like, utility belt, like, when he fixes it, he just has a beer holder on there. That is just macho.
Yeah, exactly. That's like, I don't know if you've seen this before, but I have like a straight up bottle opener in my wallet.
I have a wine key, but I don't have a bottle opener.
Yeah, it just looks like a card. It's fine.
And you just go,
I just pulled it out last night, and Dan was like, what?
It's like the dude from, there's like the dude from Office Space, the dude played by Diedrich Bader, who was in Napoleon Dynamite as the karate instructor. Mm-hmm. There's a scene in the movie, he gives him a beer, he's about to hand him a bottle opener, and then he's like, no, I got my own, don't worry about it. There's like, an Office Space.
I love Office Space. I need to rewatch that movie. I just want to beat up a printer, you know?
Oh, man. You know, Michael Bolton in the movie when he's, like, singing the rap song and then he sees a black guy coming on and he, like, rolls up his window and turns the music down.
He's like, not going to do this. Nope.
And then as soon as he goes, he blows it down and he starts just singing the rap music again.
Right? He's just like, I gotta play cool right now. I'm not going to do anything stupid.
And then as soon as he goes away, he just goes right in.
Exactly. He's like, I can be stupid now. We're good.
Well, and like, I love the interaction between Cliff and Pussycat. Well, the second one's probably my favorite when he's just chilling at the red light and then he sees her. And then he's just like, smiles at her and he's like, hey. And then he's like, I'm going the wrong way. And then he comes back and he picks her up. And they just go to the Spahn Ranch,
yeah.
Which in the context is actually where the Manson family lived in real life. But in also the context of the movie, it's where Cliff and Rick filmed Bounty Law, the show they did, because it was like a Western show, so they filmed it on this Western ranch lot.
Yeah.
But it's again, that's a great way how they tied reality into fantasy, and I loved it. So he goes to the Spahn movie ranch, and top.
It's so awkward. Oh, my God.
But it was in a good way, because the suspense was so good.
Oh,
and
yeah,
the payoff was good.
The suspense was crazy, like, because, like, he's just like, can I go see George? And they just all look at him.
And then he does it. It's not like, and the great thing is the payoff. He just sees George and talks to him. It's not like he's dead or hurt or anything. He sees him and he's just there and he has a conversation with him.
Exactly. But they're all like standing outside with their arms crossed.
Yeah.
Like this fucker right here.
Like he just goes in and is invasive. And it's weird because like Pussycat is like high, like before, like she kind of does like total when he like kind of goes on her, because like before when they were driving there, she was like high key flirting on him.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And then he did the coolest thing, because she's like, can I suck your cock while driving? And he's like, how old are you? She's like 18. I'm like, do you have driver's license or ID to prove that you're over 18? I'm like, that is such that
what a bro.
That is such a good scene. Like the fact that he's that good
guy.
I
know. Like
he's
a decent guy. I don't think he killed his wife. I really don't.
I don't
like,
either.
He's the kind of person
he
who asks.
He asked for ID. He's like, I'm not gonna go to jail for poontang. I'm like, that's so right on.
Yes. No, like, I like how Pussycat is one of the few who actually had a personality that wasn't just entirely creepy in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the ride home, like, she seemed like a genuinely, like, kind of weird girl, but she seemed, like, nice, you know?
And I think that was kind of meant to, like, represent the layers to the Manson family, kind of how they had this side of the whole time. They were, like, kind of portrayed as, like, these harmless hippies and stuff, and then you see when the shit went down. I mean, there was so much stuff to the Manson family. Charles Manson, he wanted a race war where black people ruled the world with his followers. It was like Charles Manson was a big proprietor in black supremacy. Black people ruled the world and they would live in a line with his followers. And Charles Manson's actually in the movie.
Very, very briefly. But you could miss him if you weren't looking. Yeah. Like, if you blink, I blinked. And I was like, oh, shit, I missed Charles Manson.
And guess what? You know who actually had an audition for Charles Manson, but they didn't go?
Who?
Charlie Day.
Oh, my God.
And Charlie Day said, I couldn't do it. I couldn't go to the audition. I was going to mess it up if I went. I'm like, man.
No, he could have done a good job. I want to see. If I had blinked and missed Charlie Day, though, I would have cried. So it's okay. Like, I'm glad he didn't play him because I did miss the entire Manson part.
Oh, really?
It was so quick. But, no, the pussycat thing. One of the people who she was, because she was multiple people.
Yeah, like a composite.
Yeah, one of the people who she was, her whole job was to lure guys back to the farm, and then they would, like,
yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I thought it was cool because she was trying to do that to him.
And his goal was, like, no, I'm just going to...
He's like, I'm just going to talk to George and then leave, man.
Exactly. And, you know, it's funny how it's really... minus the end scene, that's not at all historically accurate, but there's a lot... Because, like, they show Manson, he goes to the house. That actually happened. Like, because why he goes to Sharon Tate, the whole backstory is Charles Manson wanted to do a music career. He got inspired by the Beatles song Helter Skelter. And one of the Beach Boys lived at that house with a music producer, and then they moved out, and then that's when Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate moved in. He went to see if they were there. They weren't. And that's why he was going to go back and kill them. And then there's more historical accuracy with that scene, but we'll go to that. So he goes there. He kind of not really confronts because him and George don't really have any beef, but, like, he leaves and, like, the whole family's pissed that he just went in and didn't give a fuck, and then they give him the flat tire. And then this is another super cool scene because he's like, that's my boss's car. Luckily, he's got a spare. He just changes his tire. He punches the fucking dude, and he's like, fix it.
fix it.
And that reminds me of another thing I love about the movie is just how casually they smoke cigarettes.
Right. And I love how he was saving that LSD one.
Oh,
for a special moment.
And it was the right moment. Like, last time I'm going to be able to hang out with my, like, best friend. And I'm
exactly.
like.
Exactly. And Leonardo DiCaprio with his fucking, like, picture of margarita just, like, going to the pool. Oh.
Man, we're talking about that scene now.
All right, yeah, we've entered the territory.
We've talked about this for 50 minutes. We're talking about the best scene in the movie. Okay, so how the whole play begins. So Rick has to go to Italy to film these spaghetti westerns because Cliff, because he's, like, redoing his career. So it turns out this is kind of draining his finances because he has an apartment in Italy and all this stuff. So he can't afford to hire Rick Cliff anymore. So they're going to part their ways when they go back to the States. This is, like, 6 months later after the initial events. So they're, like, the narration, who's Kurt Russell, because he has a cameo early in the movie, he's like, the best friends together, they have one good old-fashioned drunk. I'm like, that's so true.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a close moment with a friend, you're like, we're just going to get fucking drunk together. It's exactly. A beautiful moment, like a dry beach nerd.
Oh, my God, we need a dry beach nerd again. That is one of my favorite memories.
Explain the context of dry beach nerds to the people listening.
Oh, so... So Jake, Sam, and I went to the beach one day. We were just like,
we all hanging out at my house,
and we were like, you know what? Let's just go to the fucking beach because we went out to get, like, food, and we were like, let's just go. So
we went to Chili's.
Sam a fucking bathing suit on our way over. Like, we were like, okay, we were at Chili's, and I think all three of us were fairly drunk at that point.
Well,
I don't know how drunk you were.
I remember the context. All we were doing that weekend was smoking weed and drinking. That's the only thing we were doing all weekend. So we were, like, either stoned or drunk, one or the other.
Yeah, and then, like, so it was. It's one of those blessed college lost weekends.
It was your last semester of college. It was amazing.
Exactly. You have to go all in.
And you tried oysters for the first time. You were like, these were gross.
Snotty as
and
fuck.
Then you gave them to Sam, and he had to eat, like, a dozen oysters because
you
didn't like
so
them.
Happy. With it though, they were gross.
He had 3 pounds of crab.
You were like, damn. Siri, I know you're a vegetarian, but do you eat shells?
This is when Siri was vegetarian. I said shells is a weird gray area, and I'm sorry, I use you an example at work, but when people order mussels, I'm always like, mussels turned my friend Siri into a meat eater.
Their shells are different.
Oh, no, the two stories I always tell people at work about Siri, that one and then the just the fact that her name's Siri and she's a teacher. Because we actually had a teacher's conference come in and I told them about like my friend Siri, she's a teacher. And they're like, and all of them always give like such sympathy. They're always like, oh no, that's awful. You have to deal with those jokes all the time from your students.
Yeah, yeah, I do. All the time. But most of the time... they just call me Miss. Some of them don't know my name.
Well, I talk about the restaurant story. Like, we went to the, like, I forget what restaurant it was, but we put your name down, and, like, they called it, and they were like, can I ask you a question, Siri?
Bob Evans.
Oh, was it Bob Evans? Okay.
Fucking Bob Evans.
It was not good. But then
I was explaining to you. I was like, Jake, you have to put your name down. You're like, no, we're fine. Just watch. And then they start mocking me.
Because I was thinking people are of a better character than that, but I'm wrong.
People are worse than you think they are, and you need to start being jaded with me. But
I'm too nice and too loving of people.
It's okay. But same though. Honestly, like I don't love them saying my name. That's the only part I'm jaded about at this point.
but
like dry beach nerds. We were coming to the context of the name.
Yeah, the dry beach. Yeah. Okay, I'm so sorry. We always get on tangents, but I love it. Okay, continue. Yeah.
So the we went to the beach. We Ubered over. We had a number of beverages. Grown-up juice.
Quotations.
We had grown-up juice. And
hard lemonade.
Yeah, so, like, we went swimming, and then we came back, and then, like, we were just, like, drying off, and, like, there was this group of friends.
They were, like, college kids, like frat boys.
Exactly.
Something.
And he was just, like, he was trying to go in the water, and his friends didn't want to, and he's like, you know what? We're going to be in the middle of the ocean. You're just going to be like dry beach nerd.
Oh.
No, we were like, okay, that's us now. That's our trio name.
And it was beautiful. And I love, if we ever start like a production company, like, okay, I'm going to call this podcast production company is called Dry Beach Nerds.
Oh my God. And it would actually, that's a great name for one.
I agree.
And like, I that night was so great. Like, I have very few nights that I, to be fair, I also remember all of it, which is also fantastic. Like, I have a lot of nights where I have had a lot of alcohol in my system.
Oh, we had a really cool Uber driver too, remember?
Oh yeah.
He was talking about
burgers, right? Like,
Burger King and this guy and his wife came in, and the first thing he asked the Uber driver was like, wanna film a porno? And he was like, and he tried to feed him a Whopper as he was driving, and then he tried to tip him with a joint, and then he took the joint back when he left the Uber. I'm like, what a dick. Like, don't say you're gonna give him a joint, then just take it back. Oh boy. But yes, dry beach nerds. So, man, I totally forgot where we were at. We were talking about the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah. Like, see, this is just... my Adderall wore off a while.
Don't worry, we're at the end. So, basically, they're having a good old drunk, and they go back to the house. And then Sharon Tate is there with three friends. Roman Polanski's not there, because he was filming a movie in Europe at the time. That's why he wasn't there.
Ah, historically accurate.
Yeah, I know. Mm. Well, yeah, it was three friends, and then... She's 8.5 months pregnant. She was 8.5 months pregnant.
She was pretty big at that point.
Yeah. And, like, that's why it's, like, such a heinous crime, people say. And then,
like, that baby is basically, like, it's basically coming out of the vagina at that point. Like, it's basically a human.
It's basically coming out of the vagina.
Like, well, that's like, literally the murder of two people. Like, I am not by any means... what they would call pro-life, but at that point, it's
but you don't agree
baby.
With murdering pregnant women
no,
in the house,
exactly. And 8.5 months in is a baby. That's a fucking child. Yeah. Like if that came out of her vagina, yeah, it would be a preemie, but it would live.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So it's basically yeah.
And so. You know all when they go back to the house and he finds the acid dip cigarette.
Oh my God!
Well, yes. Brandy's there with him too, which I love. And he's like, is tonight the night? Why not? And he goes to walk Brandy. He just smokes it. He's like, away we go. And it's very, very, it's very accurate to, it's very accurate to how acid is. Well,
it reminded me of how I just am when I'm stoned in general, not even just on acid. Well, I was just like,
how he is in the movie is like, he keeps like looking at his dinner. He's like, oh man. And when like the Manson family busts and he's like, can I help you? That's like very accurate.
I died when I saw that part. Like, you probably were annoyed at me.
Oh, well, no, I was, because when I saw it with you, it was the second time I saw it, and I was in bit of altered states. So I got.
You weren't annoyed at me then.
Well, yeah, but I did it because I loved the movie so much and I wanted to enjoy it. Just have like I had some weed in my system. I had some Angry Orchards and I was just enjoying it. I was like, oh, this movie's fucking good. And then it was in the movie. It was you see like the car with them come up, which is accurate because what happened in real life is they drove up the road to cut the power lines and then they went back, left the car, walked up, and that's when the lady left. So it's accurate that they did go to that part because they actually cut the line so they couldn't call for help, but in a twisted turn of events they go up and Rick's making his batch of frozen margaritas in this like 60s blender, right? And then he steps out. He, like, he hears the noise. It's like, the dun, 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 and then he's like, what a bunch of fucking hippies. And then this scene I love because but like even before that when he just goes up, it's so, like, accurate because he's like, hey, asshole, I'm talking to you. This is a private road. He's like, fucking hippies came to smoke dope on a den. Like, he's just cursing these guys.
Oh, my God. And you're in the middle, in the inside. He's like, God, don't piss off the fucking Manson family.
And the tension is risen up so high because he's just yelling at them. And he has the fucking gun in his... Yeah. And he's like, you came up here to smoke dope. Next time you want to do that, fix your fucking muffler. He's like, and my favorite line from the whole scene was, take this mechanical asshole and get it off my fucking street.
And like, it's the inside, your butt like, no. Like clenched. You're like, don't piss off the Mansons.
Like, you don't know what's going to happen. And yeah. Then he's like, I'm leaving. He's like, drive it backwards, numbnuts, but drive it. And fucking driving out. And then he's like, you come back again, I'm going to drive the fucking cops. And then they leave. And then they're like freaking out. And then this is where they come up with the genius idea. Instead of killing Sharon Tate because they live in the house, they're going to kill the people on TV that inspired violence. So they're going to kill Rick Dalton.
Yeah, really.
And they're going to kill everyone in the house. And then one of the chicks drives off with the car. And then they go up to the house. And then it happens with the music playing. And it's not even original music. I forgot where he got the music from that plays. It's like the cool, like, Iron Butterfly type music. They break into... acid is taking... I'm sorry. I'm kind of geeking out right now. But the acid is, like, in full effect with Cliff. And he's like, oh, man. And he tries to feed the dog. He's like... the dog whines. He's like, hey, come on.
And then, give him so much food. You gave that dog so much food.
And then all of a sudden, they just break in, like, pshoosh. And he's like, can I help you? And then it was like, I'm the devil here to do the devil's business. Which is actually something they see. And he's like, no, it was something dumber than that, like Rex. And then they, like, who's in the house? They get his wife. And then he gets his dog. He just snaps. And then the dog just barks at him like, rawr, rawr, and viciously attacks like two of them.
Right.
Like,
protective little baby girl.
Oh, my God. I just thought it was adorable. Mm. Because, like, the dog just, like, without even missing a beat, just, is, like, fucking clawing and biting these people to death. Right. Just for Cliff.
And then on the inside, you're like, oh, no, don't hurt the dog. But also, you're like, oh, I care that more. Dog's not going to, that dog's not going to let
oh,
themselves
yeah. Well, like, in
hurt.
That entire scene, I didn't give a shit about them. I just didn't want them to hurt Brandy.
Exactly.
I would feel the same way, like, if someone, like, broke into my house and Lance attacked him, I wouldn't care about them. I just want Lance to, like, kill them. But Lance is a very protective
boy.
Yeah,
exactly. It's just the whole thing.
Remember, like, if anyone comes in the house that's not me, he barks at them immediately.
Yeah, he hates my legs.
It is weird. But, okay, Lance has grown to love Siri.
He loves me when I cover my legs.
Wear pants with Lance.
Exactly. I have to wear pants around your dog or else he thinks that I'm some foreign visitor that he does not want around his family because it has legs.
Just how good of a dog Lance is. And he loves Lady and the Tramp. Maybe I'll get him on the show. He'll give his review and he'll be like, bark, bark.
He'll just sit there. He won't make the sound that you want him to make at the right time.
I decided, Siri, Lance is the mascot for the podcast.
Okay, sweet. I'm so fucking down.
He's the movie. Lance the movie dog.
Aw.
So if we have a bad movie we watch, it will be called our Dog of the Week, and Lance will be involved. I stole that from Siskel and Ebert.
At that point, I think you have to make it a video. Like, if Lance is in it, you have to not make it audio. You have to make it a video.
I will post a video like a YouTube bonus video. I'll put on there.
Perfect.
But so they basically kill the Manson family, and then when the chick is like bleeding to death and she has like fucking knives sticking out, she like busts out the fucking pool, like the back of the pool, and she storms out, and then Rick's like, what the fuck? And then he takes out his fucking flamethrower and just torches her in the fucking pool.
Oh my God, that was like That's the scene I think of every single time I think of this movie. Is I just think of the flamethrower.
Like
he goes,
well, there's like the first one when he does it to the Nazis, and the second time he does it to this, and then there's this. He actually like knew how to use the flamethrower in the context, and then that scene's improvised too. Because he's like, oh, it's really hot. He's like, Rick, it's a flamethrower, and Tarantino just like that was actually Leonardo DiCaprio's action. Tarantino just left it in.
Yeah, he's by the script, but you can't argue with DiCaprio. He's DiCaprio.
No, and you know DiCaprio took a pay cut to work with Tarantino because he's that much of a. And think about it. DiCaprio's worked with James Cameron, Martin Scorsese, Quentin Tarantino, Clint Eastwood, Elandrio, the guy that did The Revenant. I can't remember his name. He's done. All these fucking directors.
He's so dedicated. Like, when he worked with Tarantino, I don't know if it was the first Django time or not. Django was the first time. Django, yeah, it was his first time then. Yeah. When he did that, he accidentally cut himself and he played it off. And he stayed in character. And that's the take that character. And, like, you're like, how... Because, I don't know, did he ever get an Oscar for anything? I think he did.
No, he won for The Revenant.
All right, sweet. Because like that point, he had no Oscars, and I was like, "Why does this man not have a fucking Oscar?" Well, like the meme was so hard.
Well, it was before, because the one Al Pacino was the same way. Al Pacino was nominated like 8 times before he won an Oscar, and he won for A Scent of a Woman. He didn't even win for like The Godfather or Scarface.
Yeah, but Pacino didn't become a meme. That's the difference.
Well, I don't know. Pacino is definitely a meme. What are you talking about?
He's a meme
about?
Of his own sort. He's not a Leo okay, didn't yeah, win an yeah. Oscar.
He's
meme.
He's just a meme because he's Pacino. Because yeah, exactly. Like in The Irishman, kind of all he does is act Pacino. He's like, when you get like this is my Al Pacino impression. He's like, when someone comes with you a gun, you fight them. When they come with a knife, you run. With a gun, you attack. With a knife, you run. And he just goes, like, in The Irishman, he's full Pacino. He's like, ah, come on. He's like, just overacting. He's like, you're late. I'm like, 15 minutes late. I've never waited 10 minutes for being late in my life. He's like, there was traffic. He's like, I'm taking traffic into account. That's why it's 10 minutes, but not 15. I'm like, oh, so Pacino was so good.
I need to see that.
In the movie, The Irishman, he hated... when people were late for meetings or anything. And then he was like, 15 minutes for traffic. The traffic's bad. And then he's like, no, I'm taking traffic into account. You get 10. You don't get 15. And then De Niro's like, how about 12 and a half? Compromise. He torches him with the flamethrower. And then the police come. Cliff gets stabbed in the leg, but he survives. Yeah. His wife's okay, too. And then the police happen, and then... kind of a last note of the movie, a little bittersweet, is when he talks to Jay Sebring at the gate. And it's kind of like the end. It's kind of like the fairy, because Quentin Tarantino describes Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as kind of like a modern fairy tale. In the movie where he talks to them and he gets invited to the house to talk to them, it's kind of like the end of an era. And it's kind of like, it just kind of leaves you with that fuzzy feeling, you know?
Exactly. And like, oh my God, you brought up his wife, and I'm just keep thinking about
the Italian wife.
Yeah, I just keep thinking about that scene where she was just like,
"You come into my house, motherfucker."
But like, no, it left you with the warm fuzzies. It was nice.
And it's just so weird. Like he goes up like to hang out with Sharon Tate, and then you just think the whole time like, it's sad that like that's not what happened, but like, it's just cool. Like it's. Like this is the type of historical movie that like is not like it's like not the typical historical movie. It's like the same thing with Inglourious Basterds. You don't like do a Schindler's List. You do like something radical. It's exactly. Like taking these. It's just unbelievable how good it is.
And the weird thing is that when I first saw it, I thought that they were still gonna die afterwards.
Yeah.
Because the gate was unlocked and Charles was out there. They didn't kill Charles, so I was thinking maybe he would come and finish the job. Like there's still like a weird uncertainty, and I think maybe that may have just been me thinking.
He didn't close it set like that, which I thought was a good way to
exactly.
But it like because it ends like right after that scene, like
yeah. So you're like, I'm in my mind when I first watched it, I was like, oh shit, they're gonna die now. They're just prolonging it, and then it's just gonna be Charles that does it this time. But I thought about it, and I'm like, wow, Siri, you're an idiot.
No, you're not an idiot, Siri. You're just a fan.
I think too hard.
We're a cinematic analysis.
Yes, too much analysis. I'm analysis of everything.
So I kind of just want to wrap it up here. We talked for an hour and 8 minutes.
Ah, see, so we're actually over our time in this room. Sorry, FGCU library.
Oh yeah, don't worry. Again, when I have it set up in my house, we won't have to worry about this ever. We can just talk.
This is such a cool room, though.
Honestly. I do like it. And I like the curtains, too, so we don't see any fuck faces.
And then I like the green screen, and I just feel like I'm official in here. I feel important.
Like we're official people.
Yeah, I'm actually a person now. I used to be a fake person, and now I'm real.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, continue.
No, okay. No, we're wrapping it up. Just final thoughts on the movie, what you thought. I know you loved it, but...
Oh, definitely. I loved it so much. I think someone just knocked on the door.
Okay. I'm going to...
Yeah, they're kicking
us out. I'm going to... Don't worry. Okay. Just to wrap it up while I talk to them.
Okay. So I just really liked the way that the... I loved Tarantino's dialogue. It's a true Tarantino. And so I just really liked the entire way it was done. It was the dialogue, the way that it ended everything. So it was fantastic. And I am going to leave off here, but I will see you guys next time I'm on. All right. Bye. Love you.
He said we could wrap it up.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Jake's wrapping it up. We got an extra few minutes.
Yeah. Just real quick.
Yeah.
So, continue. So I love the movie. Maybe my favorite movie of the year, tied with like The Irishman and The Lighthouse, stuff like that. Absolutely loved it. Absolute masterpiece. So unique. 4 stars out of 4.
Yeah, definitely.
I go by Roger Ebert's grading, but I absolutely love this movie. Go see it. It's absolutely phenomenal.
100%.
I
hope you have seen it by this point in the podcast. Otherwise, it'll still be great, but you'll see things coming.
Yeah, exactly.
But you'll know what we're talking about.
Oh, exactly. So. And it's almost here, so watch it. It's exactly. Like rent it on Amazon or whatever the fuck
it comes
is.
Out on my birthday.
I know, the best birthday present. So, yes. Highly recommended. This is Jake signing off. Before we leave, if you just want to plug your social media in.
Oh, yeah.
Siri's going to plug her Instagram.
Yep. I'm @_SiriDiane_ if you want to hit me up, follow me. I think I'm a private account, but I accept basically anyone who's not my student. And once you graduate, I'll accept you. So if you just want to stay in there, I'll eventually approve your follow request.
All right.
Yeah.
Have a good one. Right. Thank you very much. Signing off. Take care.
Old and new, guys. Old and new.